Hello.
Hi.
And welcome. Oh, got a little meow. Those of you who are listening very closely might have heard that. Hi, welcome back to Staying In with Emily and Kumail. Guess who I am? I'm Emily V. Gordon.
I'm Kumail Nanjiani.
We're your hosts.
Second cup of coffee.
Yeah,
already?
Yeah. You decided, we record in the mornings, uh-huh. And you were like, I think I need a second cup of coffee.
Have not been sleeping well.
Yeah. Yeah. How's your quar going?
Well, let's go to you first. How are you? How has your quar been going this last week?
Here's what's interesting, and I'm going to read a tweet from Ryan O'Connell. Ryan O'Connell is the creator and writer and star of a series that's called Special that is on Netflix, and it's amazing. He tweeted, I got so much done today and was overall pretty happy, which means tomorrow I will be laying in bed despondent. And then a follow-up tweet. I've noticed a good day is like charging something on a credit card. You're going to have to pay for it eventually.
Right.
That is so true. And that is kind of what I have realized in the past week for myself is I keep thinking, oh, I've got a handle on this. Even saying it out loud is silly. Yeah. I got it. I got this. I'm doing good. Everything's fine. We are doing quite well. We're healthy. Everything's okay. So I'm like, yeah, I think I got this. And then emotionally I'm crashing for reasons that I can't point to a concrete reason why I'm crashing.
You're crashing? What do you mean crashing?
Like, my mood is up and down, and I can't, usually when my mood is up and down, when I feel terrible, like emotionally, I can go, oh, I think this is because of this, this, and this. And here it's still just the same damn excuse every time. Like it's the pandemic.
I haven't really noticed you being up and down this week.
Yeah, I mean, a little bit I have. It's not been super terrible.
Right.
I think it's more just a thing of like, I don't have anything concrete I can point to.
Right.
When I'm not doing
right,
well.
Right, right.
How about you, love?
Have not been sleeping well. I don't know. There's a lot. I feel, okay, so here's how it's been for me, I realized this week. I felt like, up until now, I don't even know how to order my thoughts. Up until now, I felt this pressure to know how I'm feeling or how I'm feeling about the quarantine or how the weirds are making me feel.
Correct.
And I feel like I've had like that sort of narrative in whatever, working up and down, up, down, dealing with it, not dealing with it, all this stuff. This week, it's felt, I don't know, maybe it's that trauma fatigue thing you were saying. I almost haven't felt, that's the end of the sentence.
You almost haven't felt like you're feeling a little numb? Is that what you're
perhaps
saying?
A little numb, even that. And it's such a new thing for me. I don't ever really feel like this. I just kind of haven't felt much of anything. And this is going to sound like a lie. It's totally true. And I think you now when I say it, it'll make sense to you. When you touch me is the only time I feel anything.
Oh boy.
Not, and
that is romantic and sad at the same time.
Yeah, it's just like when you touch me and your like temperature, your hand touches me, it feels like almost electric or something. But I don't.
This is very sexy. I like this.
Yeah, but the rest of it is not. Also, maybe it's just I haven't slept well in two nights in a row, and that's part of why I'm feeling this way right now. Mm-hmm. It's also like I've had this schedule now for 6 or 7 weeks, and I feel maybe I've put a lot of pressure on the schedule to get me through or to make me feel a certain way. Like, working out makes me feel better.
Uh-huh.
The weekend. I look forward to the weekend. When we do this, I feel like this. These are my coping strategies. And now I feel maybe some of those things are feeling the weight of expectation.
Ooh.
A little bit.
Interesting.
And so now when I work out, I'm just really tired afterwards. And it's getting harder for me to focus after that. Because usually what I do is work in the morning, work out, eat, and then work some more. I haven't been able to work some more afterwards,
that,
really.
I've been noticing that, too. My second, I'm getting so tired at like 2 or 3 p.m. in a way, because we're both working from home in a way.
Oh,
that,
yeah, you've been saying that.
Yeah, in a way that has been new. And I think it's interesting.
Yeah.
It seems like are the coping mechanisms that we were like, congratulations, we found them.
We did it. We figured it out.
they ain't working anywhere.
Yeah, it's because it's, I think it's been a long time.
Yeah,
man. It's been like, we're it's like 7 weeks or something.
Yeah,
that's a long time to be doing the same stuff. Like for me, I never really have a schedule, right? It's like all over the place. When I'm shooting or something, that's when I have most of a schedule. But even
but
then,
you know that's going to end at some point.
You know when
you
it's going to
know what the end point is.
You know what the end point is. There is a sense of satisfaction from doing this where you're like, I am working. I am doing this. It's also a lot more social, right? I'm on set. I'm around like people all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, so I feel, and also you get breaks in that.
Yeah.
Never am I working 7 weeks in a row with like 0 days off.
Right.
You know?
Not that we're not taking days off, but the pandemic has not taken any days off.
I just mean the weekends are also sort of
pandemic-y.
It's almost like I feel like we built, I'll speak for myself, I don't know. I feel like we built this force field around the horribleness outside. And that is, the force field is made of
routine.
Yeah. Of what?
Of routine.
Of routine,
yeah.
A bunch of other stuff.
Right.
And now I feel like the force field is becoming a bubble. And this pandemic is being like, oh, you thought...
So cute. Look at you.
Oh, you work out in the afternoon and that helps. Oh, that's so cute. Again, a lot of people are in much tougher positions than us. People have loved ones who are actually sick from this thing. And it's also... Here's the thing that I realized, right, that made me sad. And I'm going to use an analogy. It's going to be a bit of a long walk. It's like when you, like, go through a breakup. And I haven't, thankfully, been through a breakup in a very long time. But when you go through a breakup, like, there are those things that remind you of that person. And it's painful, right? Like, you see some song you listen to together.
Jewel. It's usually Jewel, right?
Yeah, you listen to Jewel. That's Jewel's entire career. It's just people reminiscing on past heartbreaks. You listen to Jewel and you're like, oh my God, that was that time we were in the coffee shop and it was great. And Jewel came on and we were both like, oh, this song, whatever. And then there comes to a point where as you get over it, when that song comes on, you don't feel that anymore. And then there's a sadness for not having that feeling.
Yeah. Well, you love a heartbreak also.
I love a heartbreak.
Yeah.
But I felt... And we talked about this. We've been going on night walks.
Mm-hmm.
And you said...
Less people around.
Yeah, because there's less people around, exactly. It's like empty. Last night, two nights ago, we were walking and you were like, it's so quiet. And I was like, yeah, that used to strike me so intensely. And it made me so sad for my city that it was quiet, that these bars that are always open,
just people around, like
people
loud.
Around,
yeah.
It would make me so sad. And the fact that two nights ago and last night, I didn't even notice that until you said it, that it just feels, again, it just felt, for lack of a better word, normal that the seats were this, that the city was that quiet.
And that's also a bummer.
And that's also a bummer to not feel... Like, you know, in the beginning, we used to talk about how 3 or 4 times a day, you're like, oh my God, there's this thing going around outside, and it would like make you weak in the knees. 7 weeks in, I haven't really had that thought strike me the same way.
Mm-hmm.
I have not been, and even the news that I was like devouring to my own, to the detriment of my mental health, this last week... even when I see something, it all feels like useless noise. It feels like kind of nothing. That's the end of the sentence. I don't know, man. I'm in a real place.
Yeah, you are. And I think it's interesting because I do feel like when you were talking, the only another time that I have heard a similar sentiment was when I was an intern in grad school and I had a young woman who is a mother, young mother who was bringing her kid in, described to me what poverty felt like. And I'm not trying to take it to that level, but I do think there is this thing of, there can be something that is so pervasive and so constant that it's not novel. It's not like an interesting new thing. It is just like, It is just like a heavy backpack that you're wearing.
It's almost something that you can't even deal with anymore.
Yeah. And you don't even think about it as being like the coronavirus novel. It's not even like a thing. It's just a backpack that you're carrying.
Right.
And we're all like now carrying this backpack of coronavirus. And people's backpacks have different things stuffed in them. You know what I mean? Like,
right. They're different heaviness and people feel them differently. And also, I don't think everybody's feeling how I'm feeling now. You know?
I don't know. I do think we are reaching a point that it's, and I think people are fighting it. And I think people are not happy about it. But I think you have hit the nail on the head on perhaps what a lot of people are feeling is that when things no longer feel novel, you've gotten over the novelty of weird of the weirds, but the weirds are still here.
The weirds are still here.
Yeah.
It's so... I'm so sorry. So you've probably noticed in the last few days me trying to like come up with a new schedule, trying to break through, do new things. But I say even now, just saying this out loud, talking about this makes me feel a little better.
Camille, this is what therapy is for.
If only there was some kind of thing where you could talk to someone and it would be therapeutic. Anyway, there's no such thing like that, so I guess we'll just keep doing this podcast.
That's my favorite thing about you. You're like, yeah, therapy's great. Anyway, I've never done it. It's fine.
I've never done it. Well, no. I live with a therapist.
That's a backpack that I'm wearing. And that is a thing we should all realize is that some of us have come into this already wearing heavy backpack. Everybody wears a backpack in some regard. Some of us have already come into this wearing a economic insecurity backpack, wearing a I'm living with someone I don't really love backpack.
Some people have those backpacks with a zipper, you know, it like, you know how the zippers stop working for no reason and they're just open on both sides.
Well, then that's also hopeful because it's like maybe some shit will spill out.
Oh, yeah. You don't want the stuff to stay in.
You want it to leave.
This is interesting. Is this a backpack you want emptied? Or am I thinking too much about the analogy?
I think it's a backpack that, yes, I think eventually you want to be able to put some of the stuff down. You want to be able to give it to a therapist who has the tools
you
to hold on to it.
You put it in their backpacks.
My
therapist
backpack
got big backpacks.
So full.
Oh, yours is like... You know, in Death Stranding, when you like really like level up and you, there's this video game.
Man, that's
a
very specific.
You're basically just a courier. We talked about it a little bit in the beginning. You just see pictures of like 30, 40 boxes on the back of like, you know, Norman Reedus.
Norman Reedus, actor Norman Reedus.
You're Norman Reedus.
And what's interesting about that game is that it really, you stumble and fall. You're not like effortlessly carrying this weight.
Oh, no, you're not graceful.
And I think that's an interesting mechanic for a video game. And it's also a good analogy for life. Like sometimes we're not great, our shit isn't balanced. We're not great at carrying our backpacks. But I think there's a lot of stuff you said that I would like. I have some other things to kind of dig into for it. And I do think... I'm glad you're talking to me about this because I'll be honest, you and I haven't really talked about this up until this moment.
No, because I have been feeling, and all these feelings when I couldn't sleep last night is when this sort of started coalescing. Because the hard thing about this, as someone who's, I've been fortunate enough, you know, I'm not like a person who feels any kind of way for a long period of time. I'm generally very optimistic. I'm happy. Like, I have a good time.
I have a good time.
I'm a good time guy. Don't get me wrong. I'm a party guy.
You're a fun guy.
I'm Captain Party.
We do. We call you Captain Party because you love to hang out with friends.
I do. And so I think last night when I couldn't sleep, some of these feelings coalesced for me. And sometimes, you know, I have this. I think people have this too, where you want to like find a reason, put a narrative on it. And if I had to, I started feeling like this. Not to get too political, but all these states that are starting to sort of open back up and all these protests that are happening, it really felt to me like I was like, all right, we're all in this together. We're going to hunker down. Mm-hmm. We're going to get through this. It's a disease. We're all on the same side. We are all anti-death and anti-disease. I felt like, all right, we're all going to get through this. And now when I hear about states opening up and the CDC is saying, hey, that's a little too early, but they can't really come out and say it because of political stuff. And because of that, I feel like, listen, I would love to be wrong in this case. I would love it if they open up and everything's fine. It turns out like, oh, that was the right thing to do. Nothing genuinely would make me happier. I do not want things to stay shut down. I don't think anybody does. But in my mind, when these things start opening back up, in my head, I'm just like, oh, there's going to be more people dying again. There's going to be more people getting sick. Mm-hmm. The lockdown's going to get extended, all this stuff. And it really felt like we were like fighting something together. And now it doesn't necessarily feel like that. It feels a little, we put on all this work and now we're just going to stop before the finish line.
And again, this is a problem I have where I end up empathizing much, but the way that you're feeling and the frustration you're having, inability to sleep, that's what those people protesting are feeling too. And they're doing what they think, in most cases, what they think is the best thing for them to do, because they are maybe carrying backpacks of economic insecurity.
I understand. This is not
They're maybe carrying backpacks of their roots are grown out.
I'm not even... Right, the backpacks of I Need a Haircut.
Yeah, exactly.
But I'm not. I don't feel in this moment any anger towards them.
You just kind of thought we were all on the same page.
It makes me feel a little tired. Not even sad. It just makes me feel tired.
Have you ever felt numb before this in your life?
I don't think so. Well, yeah. I don't know.
A guy who I think has always lived your life with a good amount of intention. Good or bad, whatever it is, like you're pretty good.
Harry, take out the good or bad. Thank you.
And I think, and we talked about this maybe briefly, but I think have you felt in your life that you've been on autopilot ever?
I felt like my years in Chicago, the year before I met you, maybe the 2 years before I met you, I felt a little bit like I was in a routine but I was, doing stand-up, but I felt we talked about this. I wasn't writing as much, blah blah blah, all this stuff. That's the last time I felt like that, and then getting out of it, I realized what it was. Sometimes you don't know what it was until it's in the rearview mirror,
and then you get to apply that narrative to it, whereas now you're aware of it in the moment. Do you know what I mean? And it's hard to apply a narrative to this. It just is.
Yeah.
Like we all apply, there's a type of therapy called narrative therapy. It's one of my favorites, where it's like you kind of, rather than taking the story that's been told to you about what's happening to you, and rather than just kind of not having a story, you kind of create the story of what's happening to you. Not that you're like doing fairy tales, but that you get to have a say in shaping what your life means and where it's going.
So it's almost like, for instance, you can, like, Bruce Wayne's parents died.
Batman is literally the example I was going to do, you motherfucker. I love you so much. Yes.
And then you use that for a positive thing.
Yes.
I.e. become Batman.
Becoming Batman.
Fight crime.
You know, that realistic example of becoming Batman.
Right.
Yeah, your parents are killed in front of you. That can set you up. The narrative that you create from that, which is not an easy thing to do, is either I'm this, like, this horrible trauma happened to me, I'm never going to get over this, this is awful, or you become Batman. Well, there's got to be an in-between there. But I do think, I think autopilot's an interesting thing, because I feel like it is defensively, it's a really good coping strategy at times when things are overwhelming and we are like, I just need to get through, like if you have something huge coming up, like I just need to get through a couple of weeks. I don't want to think too much. I don't want to process this. I just want to go on autopilot. I think that's okay. Like we've all done it. I think it's healthy. It's when you start living in autopilot that can feel, you just feel like you have this cushion over you, kind of like what you're talking about. It's a little bit numb feeling. And I feel like right now we need to be making decisions to be on autopilot. Like my whole thing is like, let's just be intentional about whatever we're doing. If we're going to be on autopilot for a little bit, let's do it intentionally. If we're going to make bad decisions and drink too much, let's do that intentionally. Whatever it is, instead of just letting it happen to you, realizing like we don't have a lot of control over what's happening outside, over the protests, over the illness, over any of that stuff. But what we do, what we can control is what we're doing and how we're handling things.
Right. It's almost like an outside in thing, right? Like with acting, there's like an inside out approach or an outside in approach. And the outside in approach is make a happy face and then you'll feel happy. So that's what this is, maybe. It's like putting structures in that then can affect the inside of you. I'll say real quick. You've noticed this with me when I'm playing. I love playing video games, obviously. We've talked about this many, many times. You do too. When I'm playing my NBA game, which I've been playing, it started in 2K, now it's 2K20. I've played this game for 20 years. It's my favorite video game of all time. Literally from the first one to the current one. there are sometimes I'm playing it. I play that game because I understand the, I just understand it really well. I know what I need to do to win, which is
mastery. You have mastery of it.
It's, yes, but it's not easy.
Right.
It's always hard. But you know, like you, I sort of see the numbers, like in the Matrix, Neo sees the numbers behind the thing. I see that, right? I found that how well I do in the game generally is an accurate indicator of how I'm feeling, tired, angry, or good, because winning requires a little bit of patience. I was playing it, yes. So you've noticed in the last few days, I started playing that game again.
Yeah, you haven't played it in a while.
And last night, I started playing. I was playing the Jordan team. We'll talk about the Last Dance doc in a little bit. The Jordan team from that. I'll play 2 minutes, be down by 10, start, restart. 2 minutes, down by 10, start,
and that's
restart.
Against your rules.
No, it's not. It's just, I just am like playing it. I'm not, if I was playing a season, I couldn't do it. But I'm just playing a one-off game just to get my mind off something. But I just sat there for
what are you trying to get your mind off?
I don't know.
Sorry, go ahead.
I sat there for like 2 hours just playing the first 2 minutes of the first quarter over and over and getting down each time over and over and just getting frustrated. And that game is a gauge of how I'm doing mentally, unfortunately. And part of the feeling, the thing of feeling like this is you don't even, I didn't even know I was feeling like this until there were all these indicators like, and this might be just because I haven't been sleeping well the last couple of nights. So this might be fatigue or whatever it is, man. I don't know. So I noticed that playing the game yesterday, I was like, oh, I'm
so you have these outside indicators. What are, I mean, that's great. I think that's a good thing for people to kind of be aware of when they're trying to like, when they're maybe feeling like, I don't know what's wrong with me. Like those kinds of things are good things for people to maybe look for.
Yeah. I feel like also it's certain things that like generally make you feel a certain way, not making you feel that way. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Here's one. I noticed, so I clipped my nails a week ago, right? I noticed yesterday that I'd missed a finger. One nail was really long. I have never in my life had that. I clipped my nails for a whole week, Emily. Mm-hmm. I didn't notice that my ring finger on the right hand.
You just didn't clip. I just didn't clip
and I did not notice it for a week. For a whole week, that's never happened to me.
This is something we've talked about of like being aware of your surroundings and kind of like making sure you're checking in with like my feet are on the ground. I'm wearing these shoes. I'm doing this. I forgot to clip a nail.
Absurd. Never happened. In the history of my life, that's never happened. This other thing happened. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm just talking a lot.
You're doing great.
The other day I was working out. I remember, so when I work out back there, there's been a couple times where I'm like going to a higher weight and I have you back there to be like, hey, can you just watch, make sure.
Which is very terrifying for me. Because all I want to do is look at you and smile and giggle and you are like, don't do that.
Giggling is the worst thing you could do.
I have to look at a spot on the wall, but have you in the corner of my eye as you're like,
I'm not making those sounds.
You do make sounds. They're fun.
Okay. You said something that I've thought about a lot, which is not even, you were just like, hey, so if this weight is like too much or whatever, just drop it on the floor. Who gives a shit about the floor? Don't hurt yourself. Because right now getting hurt is the hardest thing that could happen, right?
Absolutely.
So this was like 4 days ago or 5 days ago. I didn't tell you this. I was there.
I love when I get breaking news on the podcast.
Here we go. Fresh. It's not even a big thing.
Okay.
So I have a bench and under it, I have this soft like padded thing that I got.
Right.
And I had two like 100-pound dumbbells sitting on it, right?
Flex.
I'm just telling you how much the weight was, just so you know what the stakes are.
You're very strong, but I think I want people to realize like that's not normal. You're very strong.
It is a lot.
Don't pick up 100-pound weights.
The other hard thing, I had a quarantine goal for how much, and I don't, anyway. I did it. So I don't know what the fuck to do now. I can't progress that anymore because I don't have more equipment. Anyway, so I had the two dumbbells sitting there and they're round dumbbells. And I was sitting down resting between sets and I look over and I see one of the 100-pound dumbbells slowly rotating, turning towards the edge. Very, very, very slowly. I see it happening. Now I have a choice to make. Do I go and try and stop it from falling But if I don't time it, if the timing is exactly wrong, it falls and it crushes my foot.
Absolutely.
Like a 100-pound metallic dumbbell is going to break my foot.
100%.
And now I have to go to the hospital in a situation, in a time where you don't, that's the last
thing
you
want to do. Even on a good day, you don't want your foot broken.
You don't want that broken. But right now it's higher, right? Or I just let it fall to the ground. And I just sit there and I watch this very, very heavy dumbbell slowly turn. And I just watch it like, bang, hit the ground so hard. It was so loud. And it went through the padding. Like it broke.
Are you kidding?
Yeah. The floor is totally fine.
I don't give a shit about the
right,
floor.
I know you don't. But the floor, nothing happened to it. But it ripped. So, you know, because they're like, I have to put individual weights on. So on each side, there are basically like four big plates. It's like claw marks. Two lines of four, like claw marks, ripped through it, all the way through. Like I can fit my hand through it, all the way through the soft covering. It looks like Wolverine was working out back there. And I have not been able to. I play that image of it slowly rotating it.
Why?
I don't know. It's just in my head all the time. I just see it slowly rotating. I don't always see it fall, but I always see it rotating, and I see myself there.
Do you think you made the right decision?
So what I would have done next time is I should have run to the other side of the bench so that if it falls, it doesn't fall on me. But I didn't think of that. I should have run to the other side of the bench and just like held it.
Here's what I've noticed though. And then we're going to move on to some other stuff after this. I've noticed that in emergency situations, you tend to, you freak out.
Instead I freak out immediately.
Immediately instead of like having
a sense.
And then
I'm okay.
And you can't act in that moment. You often will do kind of weird things in that moment because you are in the state of freak out. Mm-hmm. To me, that's you progressing because to me, the old you, not the old you, you that I know would have totally tried to catch that dumbbell and hurt yourself. And I'm actually encouraged by seeing that you were like, no, we can't. Rather than reacting, this is what we've been talking about, to a stimulus immediately, you stopped and thought before immediately
but
reacting.
But that's interesting because to me, that thing was, I didn't do anything. Where you're saying, I did do something.
Yes. Reframe that. To me, that's a lesson for you of like reframing like, oh yeah, like freaking out in the moment and just trying to do something in that second to put a Band-Aid on something isn't as good as like thinking through what's the best plan here,
right.
Which is what you did.
Right.
I think your brain's telling you like, hey, Camille, this is what you should be doing. See, those claw marks, that could have been your foot.
Yeah.
I think this is a good thing we play.
All right. Okay. Because I just have had it in my head and as some sort of failure.
Oh my God, to me, it's a success. It's a full success that you didn't run to that dumbbell and have it crush your foot. That's a huge, that you thought, oh shit, if I do this, I could hurt myself. That's a massive success because that's what you would have done in the past.
It was so, in my head, it was so slow. However, I bet it wasn't slow. I bet
that's
it was super fast.
Also, we also need to maybe get a paranormalist back there because we're saying that the garage is haunted is what I'm hearing.
No, the garage
was haunted. Is what I'm hearing.
I appreciate you trying to find the positive fun part of this whole thing. Before we go to a commercial, can I talk about a dream real quick? Actually, let's go to commercial, then we'll come back.
Okay, why don't we end on, before we go to break, what weird thing made you cry this week?
What weird thing made you cry this week? I feel like I've been talking a lot.
I was watching the new Secret Celebrity Drag Race show, which is it's kind of a combination, if you're a Drag Race fan, of Drag U plus like literally putting celebrities in drag.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fun show. It's great. Our good friend Jermaine Fowler was in the first episode, which was great. But while I was watching it online with ads and I saw a Charmin ad. Do you know Charmin?
I was like, oh, that show made you cry? That's not weird. Weird.
So, you know, the bears, the Charmin bears. And I guess the campaign came from, does a bear shit in the woods or whatever? I guess that's how they started.
I assumed it was like you can wipe your butt on a bear and get...
It's that phrase, that common phrase, you can wipe your butt on a bear?
You're talking... you know, well, before toilet papers, people were wiping their butts on bears.
Well, and then they were dying because I would imagine bears don't really like it.
Yeah, no, it was tough.
Getting human
you
feces.
Really had to go. You really had to go.
Is the bear sleeping or awake? That would be so much pressure. I don't think I could go.
You want to find a hibernating bear. So what would happen is...
That's actually helpful.
Back in the old days, you find like a cave of hibernating bears. Mm-hmm. You go, you poop outside, then you rub your butt. Bears wake up 6 months later or whatever, and they're like, oh.
What happened to me?
The thing is, when bears are hibernating, are they shitting the whole time? Are they waking up in like just a bunch of shit and then human shit wiped on there?
That's a very good question.
They're not eating.
Yeah, because they've eaten a lot. They and their gotta bodies be, are made for it.
If they, I bet they're not peeping or pooing. Peeping or pooing. Pooping or peeing.
I bet you're right. I once saw at the Atlanta Zoo a panda that was eating bamboo and sitting like a person would, and I was watching the shit come out of its butt as it was eating the bamboo.
And what did you call it?
It's like a Play-Doh fun factory.
It was like a Play-Doh fun factory.
And I just watched, and it was before cameras, or else I would have taken a video, and I was just like, the horror of like watching the miracle of digestion happen in front of you.
That bear efficient.
Anyway, so Charmin, do bears shit in the woods? I guess is how they came up with these cartoon bears that their whole thing is you can wipe your butt with the Charmin and it doesn't leave stuff on your butt. I don't know how the campaign slogan started, but that's the bears. And so the commercial is,
oh God,
a family of the family of bears sitting at home on a couch. That's cool. Inside watching TV. And then voiceover is like, listen, we know stuff is scary. We're working so hard to make you more toilet paper. I swear to God we are. And the bear, and I guess the idea is that the bears are watching the commercial. And then they're like, we'll keep making toilet paper. You just stay safe out there.
Oh my God, Emily.
And then the daddy bear. And how do I know it's a daddy bear? Because it's not wearing a bow.
You know how to sex a bear.
I can sex a bear. The bear grabs the family of bears and squeezes them all. Like you would Charmin, I guess. And I started crying so hard. Because we are starting to see commercials that are Corona commercials.
Yeah, there's a lot of them, and usually they just like just change voiceover. The voiceover.
And then I just pictured the voiceover actor in their closet at home having to read the lines.
Right.
Anyway, so that was a weird thing that made me cry this week was that Charmin commercial. Am I even saying Charmin? Is it Charmin or Charmin? Is it Chernobyl or Chernobyl?
It's Chernobyl. I guess it is Charmin.
Charmin. Don't squeeze the Charmin.
It's not from the word charming because there's nothing charming about toilet paper.
Charmin.
Nobody Charmin. Says like, that's
guys,
not.
Guys, write in. stayinginpodcast@gmail.com. How do you say Charmin? Charmin.
Yeah.
What weird thing made you cry? And then we're going to go to break.
One, I will say real quick, I feel way better that you've reframed the dumbbell story. Again, you look for narratives, and I'm like, that was the turning point of my week, was seeing the dumbbell fall and not doing anything, and just replaying that in my head. That is maybe the start of what put me in this.
Oh, you took the wrong lesson from it, honey.
Malaise. I don't know what it is. So I do feel a lot better from
good.
That.
That's wonderful. Hey, guys, this isn't for you. This podcast is for us, and thanks for listening.
I guess that's what the lesson we've learned is, if something has happened, try and find a positive spin on it.
I wasn't even trying to. To me, that is just good news because I know how you react in emergency situations generally, and you generally freak the fuck out.
Yeah. No, I just sat there.
There was a noise one time.
It was so loud.
In our backyard in the middle of the night, and your response was to wake me up and be like, Emily, what are we going to do?
It was the
wind blowing a thing in the backyard, but I think you thought there was a burglar, and your response was like, Emily.
Listen, I'm going to go take care of the burglar, but I want to wake you up and say goodbye to you. I want to be like, I love you.
I'm the one that keeps the baseball bat next to the bed. I'm going to be a big strong man.
So.
What weird thing made you cry? That thing?
I guess nothing.
Oh, see, that's where we are because you're in a numb spot.
A little bit. But I will say the thing that made me very emotional was we were watching this. So I mentioned last week that we watched Alien, right? Hold on. Let me see what the... Okay. It's called Memory, Origins of Alien. It's a making of documentary about the making of
Alien.
Movie Alien, one of my favorite movies.
It's really good.
It's a really good documentary. Some of it's making us, some of it's breakdown. There's a part where they talk about a significant portion of the movie is dedicated to talking about like the chestburster scene when the alien escapes out of John Hurt. That's the first time you see the alien. And it's considered like one of the most iconic scenes in all of film. It's obviously, it's like such a great, it's been parodied many times. It's one of those moments that it's just one of those, it just looms large, right? When you think of Alien, that's the thing you think of. So I was, why are you laughing?
It looms large is what I said to RuPaul when I met him. I said, you have loomed large in my life.
Loomed large.
And I was, when I went back to my seat afterwards, I said, why did I have to say that?
Well, but that was, but then since then we did the show. So,
Go ahead.
So they were talking about the making of that scene and how much work went into it. And Veronica Cartwright, who plays Lambert, who's like the, it's Sigourney Weaver playing Ripley and Veronica Lambert are like the women in the film. She talks about that day of filming and how they were like all waiting upstairs in their rooms and there was a hallway and Harry Dean Stanton was playing the guitar and they were just like waiting in their rooms, waiting to shoot the scene, right? And they were just like, I'm getting emotional now. I'm going to cry now.
I love it.
Hey, you did something good. They were talking about this. What a weird thing to cry about.
I cried days later. Cartoon bears.
Yeah. Well, at least those bears are trying to make you cry. Those bears know what they're doing. Those bears are like, get a load of this.
Stay in it. Don't leave.
Oh my God. You're so good. She was talking about how like it was taking forever to set up and they were just waiting there. Like what the fuck is going on? And then they finally called them, you know? And I was like, did they know?
What?
Yeah. That they were going to shoot something like
iconic as fuck? Yeah.
That day? They probably didn't. Mm-mm. It was a day where they were just like sitting around being like, oh, it's, you know, they're maybe 3-4 weeks into the shoot. They're tired. I don't know what it is. They're like, oh, today was the day we're doing that fucking scene. The director and the producers, at least according to this, knew how important that scene was. And a lot of prep went into it. None of the actors had seen that alien. They didn't know what
it looked
like.
They wanted to keep it from them, in fact.
Right.
Yeah.
It fucked up the first couple times. They didn't know how much blood was going to pour on them.
They couldn't get through the shirt.
First couple times. And Veronica Cartwright talks about how when she got down there, everybody else was, the whole crew's wearing like plastic gear, like you would wear if you're
hazmat.
Like front row of a Gallagher concert.
Correct.
And she was like, oh my God, what's going to happen here? And just the idea of such a normal day turning into something that lives on forever. Don't laugh at me.
No, I love it.
I just found it very inspiring and moving. Like, and then when they did it, did they know what it was going to be? Probably not. How could anybody expect that, right? And then she talks about how when they shoot the blood out, the first blood, they don't know how much it's going. It hit her so hard and it shocked her so much that she fell down.
That's right. And you can see that.
And she gets back up.
Yeah.
And when you watch the movie, she falls down. You're like, oh, in my head, it could have happened no other way, you know?
Yeah.
Like this was the only way it could work. And then to find out that it was just like an accident.
She literally says, I had to go get back in the scene.
Yeah. That it just was an accident.
Yeah.
And they said, and you could see all of them, Yaphet Kotto, Tom Skerritt, everybody, Bilbo Baggins, they all have, I'm sorry.
You nerd.
All have a different reaction to the blood. And that's because they didn't have time to prepare or think about it. They didn't know what was coming. So their reaction is truly a genuine reaction. And I don't know, I found that extremely moving because,
and I like that the crew worked hard to they were like, we want to get them.
It was important.
Yeah. And by the way, on the script, one page. That was a one page scene.
Yeah,
which and is
now
amazing.
It's like one of the most iconic things they shot one day. Harry Dean Stanton was playing guitar because they were bored. They were getting annoyed, and you know, it got me thinking like, when you're doing a scene
or doing anything,
do you know it's going to be
no
awesome when you're doing it?
No.
A lot of times you feel like it is and it isn't.
Yep.
That's way more common. That's way more common where you think it's going to be great and then it just isn't. I've certainly been done many things, part of many things that in the moment I was like, wow, this is going to be really special. And it just isn't.
And then sometimes we don't realize when a moment is special. We're going to talk about that actually in a moment when we come back from
a break. Let's go take a break.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
And we are back.
We are back.
Can I talk about a dream real quick?
No. No, I want to. We'll get to that in a minute. Yeah,
we'll save the dream.
But this was very relevant to what you were just saying.
Yeah.
There was an article in CNN.com. Listen, here we are out here recommending some CNN.com articles.
Some basic bitches.
Yeah, that was written by.
Nothing wrong with CNN.com. No, no, no. I'm just saying.
The author is The School of Life. A little suspect in my eyes. Don't know what that means
what
exactly.
What do you mean, author is School
they're
of Life?
They're a group. When I looked at it, my sister sent this to me. And when I looked at the author, I was like, I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
But it's a bit of an article about kind of what you were talking about of like, do we know when things are special or things are tough or things are like, we're often so much thinking about the past and thinking about the future that it's like, do we know when things are special now? So I'm just going to read you a couple of quotes. This School of Life author is basically advocating for one day at a time thinking during this pandemic. I saw someone else do that too.
That's like almost like a recovery thing.
It's definitely a recovery thing that you don't think about, and you can apply it for relationships too. I think when people
you just have to get through today.
Commitment phobic. It's like, oh, I'm not. Can I spend the rest of my life with this person?
You're recommitting every day.
No, but can you spend today with this person? That's really right. All you need to do. Can you spend today and be sober today?
Right.
Can you get through today? A friend of ours, and I won't mention his name because I didn't ask him ahead of time, posted a thing on his Instagram about how his cat. Sitting on his father, and his cat passed away last week. His father passed away a year ago. And he was like, I didn't know how special this moment was.
Yeah.
Because you don't know in the moment, similar to the chestburster scene, bringing it together. One day at a time thinking, and this is me reading from the CNN article, which you could look up. One day at a time thinking reminds us that in many cases, our greatest enemy is that otherwise critical nectar, hope, and the perplexing emotion it tends to bring with it, impatience. By limiting our horizons to tonight, we are girding ourselves for the long haul and remembering that an improvement may be best achieved when we manage not to await it too ardently. Our most productive mood may be that of quiet melancholy, with which we can ward off the temptations of rage or mania and fully imbibe the moderate steadfastness required to do fiddly things. Write a book, bring up a child, repair a marriage, or work through a mental breakdown. All right, guys. Taking it day by day means reducing the degree of control we expect to bring to bear on the uncertain future. It means recognizing that we have no serious capacity to exercise our will on a span of years and should not therefore disdain a chance to secure one or two minor wins in the hours ahead of us. We should, from a new perspective, count ourselves immensely grateful if by nightfall there have been no further arguments, no seizures, the rain has let off, and we found one or two interesting pages to read. As life grows more complicated, we can remember to unclench a little and smile along the way rather than jealously husbanding our reserves of joy for a finale somewhere in the nebulous distance.
Oh, no.
Oof, how great is that? Unclench and smile a little along the way rather than jealously husbanding our reserves of joy for a finale somewhere in the nebulous distance. Given the scale of what we are up against, wow. Knowing that perfection may never occur and that far worse may be coming our way, we can stoop to accept with fresh gratitude a few of the minor gifts that are already within our grasp.
I think that's so true. I feel like maybe I've been sort of saving being happy for the weekend, which is strange. Like, you know, so we basically, for instance, we got this movie that we love horror movies, and we got this movie that we wanted to see. You knew somebody. I don't want to say the name of the movie or anything.
It's a movie that's not out yet.
It's not out yet. And we basically were like, we want to see it. So Emily, you asked.
I didn't even ask.
We got an early copy of this movie we really wanted to see. And you were like, let's just watch it tonight. You said this yesterday. And I was like, in my head, I was like, no, let's watch it over the weekend. The weekend is when good things happen. That doesn't happen during the week. But then I just honestly was so tired that I was like, yeah, let's just watch it. Turned out to not be the most uplifting movie to watch right now. Beautiful movie.
But not the movie that I really, but
it's interesting when you read something and it makes you realize you've been doing something that you didn't know you were doing, which was trying to save up positivity and good times for the weekend or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Can you read the very first sentence you read? Can you read that again?
One day at a time thinking reminds us that, in many cases, our greatest enemy is that otherwise critical nectar, hope, and the perplexing emotion it tends to bring with it, impatience.
Right. I realized just now that what I've been doing with working out in the beginning versus how I've been doing it right now is, you know, one of the things I had to convince myself over the last year and a half of working out was I had to learn to enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And I had to learn to like be in the moment with it because it forces you to be in the moment. And I realized the last few days, maybe the last week, I've been doing it as a means to an end, i.e. making me less anxious rather than an end of itself in itself, which is just enjoying being there and working out, mm-hmm. right? And I feel like that's been the big issue with me with working out for the last week and a half has been, I'm like, okay, now time for this to make me feel better rather than, this is time for me. Let's just do this.
Be in your body, not be on a screen.
Right. All that be stuff. In your body, not mm-hmm. be on a screen, not be outside. Don't think about what's going to happen tomorrow or the day after. Just be here right now. Whereas right now I'm like going like, if I do this, I will feel better.
And then
in
being
an hour.
Angry when it doesn't work.
Not even angry. Just
continuing to be feeling numb.
Yeah. So I think, well, that's hopefully.
And just like the chestburster scene being filmed, you don't know any
exactly.
of these moments could be the thing that when we look back on this, I think when we look back on this, I'm probably going to remember night walks. I'm probably going to remember like going to get food, wearing masks. Like I'm going to remember stuff like that.
We're going to remember snatches. I read a thing that said like, because every day is very similar, you may not have as many specific memories of this time mm-hmm. As you think you might, because it might all become, even though it's going to last, it's months already, but however long this takes, that at the end, it may just be like this black box where when you open it, there are like a few things that jump out, mm-hmm. night walks, wearing masks to get food, but not really knowing the order of things or even how you felt certain times and that kind of stuff.
But I think it's similar to anything. I think I got during while we were shooting the Meltdown television show for Comedy Central, I don't really remember the episodes that went off without a hitch. What I remember are the ones where it's like, fuck, Fred Armisen, is he going to show up? We actually don't know because we don't know when he's going to get out of work. Like, I remember the times.
And he did show up. He was absolutely fantastic.
He did great, but I always remember the things that went wrong. I think later when you like look back on your life, you're not going to remember like, oh, I had a lovely prom.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
I remember
everything
when
went fine.
When I would go to bed really late in Chicago for those many years, which ultimately turned out to be, I know was like ultimately very destructive. But I remember because I had a day job and I just didn't sleep at all for a long time. I would always say to myself, you're never going to remember going to bed on time. The truth is, I don't remember the times I went to bed at 4 a.m. either. I don't know what the fuck I was doing those nights, you know? But I think that's, okay, good.
I want to read one more quote that I got from, I love Trixie Mattel and Katya, whose last name I cannot pronounce. Two drag queens I adore. They have a show called And what they've started doing in the pandemic is a show called Trixie and Katya Save the World, where they like answer listener questions, reader questions, whatever. They answer questions from the safety of their own homes. Katya said on last week's episode, and I'm sure this is not Katya's direct quote, but the amount of pain you have is directly related to the amount of resistance you have to the situation. And the amount of joy is related to the amount of acceptance you have.
Wow. Okay.
I thought that was a really lovely, and I'd not heard it put exactly like that. But I thought that was a really lovely way of like, it doesn't mean that you accept bad, awful things happening to you. It means that you work for what you can, but you accept what you can't change. I mean, it's the classic adage. So I think that's a really good place for us to be.
Yeah. I feel, again, right now, I feel pretty open And I, again, I don't want to be like, oh, Emily and I talked and she told me that the dumbbell thing was good. And now I feel like myself
maybe
again.
That's what therapy is.
But I'm just telling you right now, I just feel more engaged than I have the last few days. And I am looking forward to the rest of the day just to actually do the stuff and not what doing the stuff will
it's supposed to bring to you.
Yeah, exactly.
I think, we're reaching a point where the stuff that we did, the structures we created to make ourselves happy and safe during the coronavirus maybe need to shift a little bit because nothing, the only constant is change, even in this pandemic.
Well, can I say?
Of course.
This is about the dream. It'll fit in. I just want to talk about
it. Yes.
Is that okay?
Of course.
So a recurring dream that I have is I am back in college and it's the last day and I'm packing up my stuff and I'm doing graduation. I'm ready to go out into the real world. This is a recurring dream I have. Not all the time, but I have it, you know, twice a year or something. Not that much, but it always feels very significant when it happens. And I was talking to, I'll mention his name, it's fine. This was a while ago, Zach Woods, right? And I was like, I don't know what the dream
not
means.
Not that you're not talking to Zach Woods now.
No. I love Zach. I just haven't, I don't like saying names of people
without
asking them. I was talking to Zach about it and he was like, it's the dream's about change. It's about you going through a big change in your life or about to go through a big change in your life, right? And when I look back on every time I've had that dream, it's true. Mm-hmm. That has always happened. But it happened last week, which is seems to be, you said the only constant is change. Mm-hmm. Right now, I don't know what the change is. Maybe the dream is saying, like, I need to switch things up a bit. I don't know.
Interesting.
What's funny about the dream is, it's, you know, you might be like, because my dreams are always very literal. And
so
this
literal.
One is like a little bit symbolic. In the dream, I have a dream I'm having this dream.
That you always have.
That I always have. Mm-hmm. I'm packing up and I'm feeling the excitement, the sadness, all that stuff that you feel from going from being in college to real life. Maybe it's from Reality Bites a little bit. I wake up and then I'm in another dream where I am graduating the next day and I'm hanging out with friends and everybody else is packed and I am not packed and I'm stressed out about it. And even in the dream, I'm like, oh my God, my dreams are so literal. It's like Inception. It's the dream within a dream. Because my body was like, oh, my brain was like, oh, that's too much. Let's bridge it. So there's a dream where I have to graduate. Then I wake up and I'm in a dream where I have to graduate. And I'm saying, man, that dream was really literal. And then I wake up. It's so weird.
As A.D. Bryant said on this past week's episode of Saturday Night Live, she did a sketch like going through her old childhood diaries. She said, and I just thought it was so funny, I wrote it down, I can't keep looking back at the past and I have nothing inside of this apartment that is the future. I thought that was so
love
funny.
A.D.
Because it's so true. Like none of us are, other than consuming new media, we have nothing new in our lives. We're all just bathing in our own filth every day. It's
right.
Kind of astounding.
It's like we're in the bathtub and there's like
nobody's
changing the water. You're just like in the bathtub and you're like, I mean, I like being in the bath, but also would be great if I could get out and get a new bathtub.
Just like
going.
Look at different walls.
We're
I mean,
hibernating in a bathtub.
Yeah. And we're shitting all over ourselves in our sleep.
But, you know, it sort of goes back to what it was also Zach who said this last week. I talked
he's
about
so
it last
smart
week.
About this stuff.
He's
he really
just,
is.
He is.
He's a genius.
that this is life, too. That this is not just a pause. This is not just a hiatus.
Yeah. This is still life.
Maybe hearing, again, I'm trying to, like, find reasons for why I'm feeling the way I'm feeling. Maybe it's just, that's just how I've been feeling.
Yeah.
But I don't like it. If I had the energy, I really wouldn't like it. But I don't have the energy to dislike it.
Like I don't like it.
I don't like it.
It's just saying, Kumail does not like feeling like this.
I think you know this. I feel too much sometimes, even if it's anger or whatever. And to not have that, to not have feeling is it's very new.
Think of it as a form of self-protection for now and then look for ways that you can intentionally guide the ship. That's the thing. Like you're still driving the ship. Even if the ocean is like chaotic, it's still your ship to drive. And right. I think sometimes it's okay for us to take our hands off the wheel and that's what we need. But I think remembering, even if I'm going to drive that ship straight into the chaos of the ocean, remembering it is still yours to drive.
Yeah. And honestly, saying it out loud, really.
What a crazy thing, Kumail. What a surprising.
If only there was some sort of industry or practice or occupation that could mimic the, anyway.
I think we're going to answer a couple of reader emails. I also first wanted to say a lot of people chimed in, including my sister, saying that the gum dream is, which I talked about in last episode, that I thought, I was like, oh, that's a respirator dream. The gum dream, it turns out, is a very common dream.
Yeah.
And so my guess is that maybe it's not. Maybe I was wrong about it being respirator-ish because everybody, a lot of women, I've not heard from a man yet. If there's a man who's had the gum dream, I'd love to hear it. But enough people contacted me that I was like, hey, probably wrong about that.
Interesting.
I can admit that I'm wrong.
Men haven't had the gum dream.
Maybe they just haven't reached out. I don't know. Maybe men aren't like really
as emotive as they should be.
No, maybe they aren't like, maybe, I don't know. Who knows what it is.
Yeah.
Couple things, a couple of news items I wanted to mention. One, I have been out of birdseed for about a week now.
Yeah, what happened?
Here's what happened. I left the birdseed bag outside,
right.
Which is, you shouldn't do that because the squirrels will rip into it. I just did it like one night, but it happened to be a night that it was raining here in Los Angeles. So unbeknownst to me, the bottom, I'd say 4 inches of a very large bag of birdseed sprouted. Just became a solid mass.
Hey man, that's kind of cool.
Life
they were
begins.
Like, we're not just.
Yeah.
Why is that not happening in bird stomachs?
And we'll be right back. I guess the same reason that a watermelon doesn't grow in your stomach when you eat a watermelon seed, acid. Have you seen their poop? There's gross stuff happening inside of them.
Why is it white?
It's so
Birds,
creepy. Why is
get
it chalky?
Your poop colored. I don't like the texture. Don't like the color. Get on board.
Have you been
all of us are pooping the same way, and then birds come along and like, we're going to do things a little differently. Here's some Basquiat or whatever.
Some Basquiat.
I don't know. Pollock, is that the guy who had the splashes?
Jackson Pollock, that is correct. Have you been pooped on by a bird?
I've never been pooped everybody on. Has.
I don't think that I have, even though I've
You've
been in the
been
wilderness. I don't think I have.
I had a crush on a girl in high school, and the bully sent her flowers with my name on them on Valentine's Day to fuck with me. And I got scared and I hid in the library all day. And when I left, a bird shat on my head.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day. That's not the only time.
It's supposed to be good luck.
It smells weird because, again, it doesn't smell like poop.
It's almost like mustardish. I've definitely touched bird poop, fresh bird poop. Not on purpose.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, you've lived a life. Let's not... No, no, no. Nobody's blame. No. You've had experiences. Listen, don't get me wrong. I've touched bird poop.
You know, sometimes
I remember a specific memory as a kid touching a bird poop and it being still soft.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
You expect it to be hard.
You expect it to be hard, but it stays soft for a while. It's pretty disgusting. Point is, I have not been able to feed the birds in a while, and they disappear. They are not loyal. These hoes ain't loyal.
Well, honey, why would they be coming? There's no.
I know, but I thought maybe they like me. So yeah, haven't had any squirrels, haven't had any birds. I've just been, yesterday there was a mourning dove in our front yard, and I went outside and offered it bread, and it flew away from me. So
you come on strong.
I come on too strong. That is part of my issue. But also, I threw a Roomba away. That's the other thing that happened this past week.
What?
I did.
Why?
It hasn't really worked. P.S. Let's all get real. Roombas don't work. I think we're learning that. Roombas, they don't work.
They say that it like maps out your house.
It doesn't. It's not
so
that smart.
So if it's mapping out your house, why is it choosing to break through a corner at all times?
One time it locked itself into a bathroom because it closed the door behind it.
It closed the door in the bathroom.
And it just was like panicking
screaming.
In there.
It was panicking in there.
And it hadn't worked really in like a while, but it had just been sitting there. I think because I had personified it and didn't want to get rid of it. Isn't that sad?
Yeah. Yeah. Also, I don't like the name Roomba. Why? Because it's in a room? Everything's in a room.
Everything's in a room.
Roomba. Oh, this coffee cup should be called Roombas. Everything's in a room.
We just number them. Roomba 3.
Roomba 3. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I went and fell asleep in my Roomba 5. And then, of course, Roomba 1 is stuck in a corner contemplating life.
I guess it would get Roomba 1. What would you rather that be called, that product?
It's a vacuum cleaner, right? It's a robot vacuum cleaner. Come up with some like fun robot name.
Wouldn't it be Roomba?
It's also a dance.
The robot is a dance?
No, a Roomba.
Oh, well, the robot is a dance.
Yeah.
Shit. Yeah. They should have called it the cha-cha.
The cha-cha. It's because if you see that thing moving around, nothing is further from a dance than what that thing is doing. It is banging against a wall. It's like an NPC in like a Sega Genesis RPG. It's just like running into a wall. It's crazy when we first got it because somebody recommended it to us and it was like, it goes through, maps your whole house. And we were like, wow, we didn't know the technology was here.
It's not.
Reader, it's not. It's not doing anything. It gets stuck. There's not enough, like it doesn't pick up enough garbage.
No, to make it work. And it scares our cat. Our cat never rode on it once, which is not as advertised.
And at some point she stopped being scared of it too. So even that fun is gone.
Yeah, there's no fun.
Even our cat was like, all right, this thing doesn't know what's going on.
Bye-bye, Roomba. I'm going to read just a couple of fun email subject lines I've gotten in the past week. I'm really...
Oh, from corporate
people? From corporate people. This one's from Saks Off Fifth, which is the Saks on Fifth Avenue...
Saks Fifth Avenue is like
discount
a fancy...
store?
Yes.
Yeah. A lot has happened since your last visit. What if that's how I found out about it?
I love the idea of someone finding out about the epidemic.
What's this?
Email from like a clothing shop. A lot has happened.
And
since
it's in all caps. A lot has happened.
It'd be funny if it was just shit that's happened to them and nothing to do with the pandemic.
We've moved so many clothing.
Just internal politics.
From denim to masks. That's from a denim company. Like there, I guess they're making. Yeah.
They making denim masks?
I did not click on the email.
That
to
does
find
not
out.
Sound comfortable.
Old Navy, because summer isn't canceled. There's a lot of that because blah 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 isn't canceled.
Summer is canceled.
Me too.
But what does Old Navy mean?
You get to still wear clothes. You should still buy clothes to wear this summer, even if you're not going anywhere, I guess. And Misha Nodo similarly said sustainability isn't canceled.
Okay.
That's true. Keds, sneakers to boost that mood.
Sneakers to boost that mood? Man, that is putting a lot on some fucking sneakers.
And then my favorite one from a company called Chef Steps, which I don't know how I got on their mailing list. Make your own bread flour.
It's funny to think of these places as people all going through the pandemic in their own way. Make your own bread flour. I don't know where to start.
I don't want to. I also don't want to.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you want to do a couple of reader mails?
Yeah, let's take another break.
Hey, here's some ads. Go pay attention to them.
You've worked hard for what you have, your money, your assets, your 401k, and home. Isn't it all worth protecting? Nearly one in four consumers have been a victim of identity theft. LifeLock Ultimate Plus helps protect your finances with up to $3 million in reimbursement. LifeLock alerts you to identity threats you might miss. And if your identity is stolen, your dedicated U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. Let LifeLock help protect what you've worked so hard for. Save 25% off your first year on LifeLock Ultimate Plus at LifeLock.com/aware. Terms apply.
Every day in America, 60 million packages are delivered. But we don't always know what's inside.
He bent down to pick the package up. That's when the device detonated.
Danger is everywhere. No one is safe in Austin, Texas, as law enforcement hunts a serial bomber for 19 days. From Sony Music Entertainment, Campside Media, and Pegalo Pictures, this is Witnessed. 19 Days. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts to binge all episodes or listen weekly wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Let's do some more reader emails, Emily.
Okay. Here's one from Ashley D. I had a student who randomly sent me a slideshow of all the places she'd like to visit after COVID-19. It brought tears to my eyes, and we wanted to extend the question to you. What are three places you'd most like to visit after COVID-19?
Oh, it's making me sad thinking about
it. Sorry about this.
No, it's okay. It just, have you thought about this?
A little bit. Like mine range from my parents' house. I want to go to my parents' house.
Right.
It's where I grew up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's on my list too. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Number one, Emily's parents' house. Yeah, yeah, yeah. For as long as possible.
We love you.
We do. I do. I honestly, I was very sad that we couldn't go for Christmas last year.
Yeah.
who knows what happens this year. I love going back there for Christmas because it's just so different from being in LA.
Yeah, it's true. Where else would I like to go? I would like to go. Mine are all like embarrassing. Like, I want to go to a restaurant.
Yeah,
like,
me too.
I just want to go to any. That's one place I'd
like to
go. That's
the first thing I thought of is like our neighborhood places where we hang out. I just want to go there. I want to see how they're doing. There's a place we always go to. And last few days I was like, are they going to come back?
Yeah, they haven't even been open for takeout if it's the place I'm thinking of.
Yeah. I was thinking of a different place, sure. But both are closed. Yeah.
Yeah. And I also think I would want to go to, I want to go to New York. We lived in New York for a few years. We go there quite frequently. Yeah. I love being there. And I just, I don't know. I find myself wanting to be there, yeah. Even though the idea of it right now is not
right,
my favorite.
I think what's wrapped up in it, when you saw New York, when you said New York, I had the same thing. To me, the idea that's wrapped up in it, I want to go to New York because then I know New York will be okay.
Yeah. Oh.
No. Yeah.
Almost happened again.
Yeah.
What three places would you want to go?
I would say New York just because I do love that place so much. But, you know, a lot of my family's there. And it's been obviously going through some really devastating stuff. So I want to go to New York because then I'll know, like, okay, it's behind us. Mm-hmm. I want to go to a specific restaurant that we love. I just want to be there.
Mm-hmm. And my parents.
Yeah, parents' house is number one. You know, I usually like, I would have said, leave the country, go somewhere else. But I don't want to leave the country right now. Even if somehow this thing completely disappeared and they're like, you're 100% good, be wherever you want to go. I want to be in LA. I want to go around, be in LA. I don't want to leave the country.
Yeah, I thought about like, ooh, a beach. And I'm like, not right now.
To me, the normal stuff feels like a vacation right now. And so yeah. I would want to do the normal stuff.
That's often true for us because, you know, we spent a lot of last year out of town while you were shooting a movie. And so we spent like 6 months in another place entirely.
It's like on a monkey spa. We were like, we want to be home for a while.
No, right?
And it was like, done. It's like snapped and you're like, oh my God, you can only be home.
Yeah. And then when you come back, you're like, all you want to do is be home. That's kind of what part of this is. Yeah. Let's see. Let's read another one. Did you want to read the one from Andrew W. or do you want me to read it?
Andrew W.?
The first one.
Okay.
I'm happy to read it if you'd like.
So this is from Andrew W. I'm not good at reading. I go too fast.
I know.
Watch this.
Go for it.
Been in Beijing. I say this to give people hope.
By the way, his name is not Ben. His name is Andrew W.
Andrew W.
He's been
in Beijing. I say this to give people hope. I've been an expat teacher in Beijing for the last 7 years. I've seen crazy things, but nothing compared to this. I've been in lockdown in my apartment until recently, since late January. So I feel I'm a bit ahead of time from the rest of you. That's true. They had the first. Mm-hmm. I just want to let everyone know it has gotten better. Streets are lively.
Here we go.
Restaurants are packed. So please, if this gives you any shred of hope, please know things will get better. There is a light and you will all come out soon.
That's a very lovely email.
Yeah.
I like that.
It feels so far away.
Perhaps, but that doesn't mean, yeah. And we'll stay focused on today, but there is something
right.
in the future.
That's
yeah.
right. That's right.
This one's from Jen N. I'm an immunobuddy. Love that term. And I've been hiding away in my home office during the weirds. I've reached week 5 at home and my indoor plant obsession is getting unmanageable, but we're all healthy, so it's fine, right? However, I'm a frontline physiotherapist working with kids with complex and severe disabilities. The problem is I feel guilt that I am working from home because of my non-existent immune system while my colleagues are still at work. She's saying that the guilt she feels from that is immense. I can't seem to shake it. And while I definitely appreciate being allowed to work from home, I'm continually feeling such deep guilt for leaving my colleagues out on the front line. I wonder if you guys have ever experienced these sorts of feelings. Camille, I can hear you yelling, no, stay inside, stay safe. And then she just says nice things to us.
Stay inside, stay safe, Jen.
Yes.
Your colleagues understand, I think.
I think that I feel that guilt. I have certainly felt that guilt on the times that I have had to, they put us, when we were promoting The Big Sick, for example, years ago, they put us on an incredibly intense PR schedule. By the way, what a joy to have like an intense, like have press to do about the movie. But it was so intense that I became frightened that it was going to hurt me physically. And it was new PR people for us. They're wonderful. They love us. But there was a point during that PR experience that I had to say to them, hey, listen, I have to, you've got to put some breaks in there for me. If I don't have a couple of breaks throughout the day, I could get sick. It's just part of what my body needs. Like, I need a lunch break.
And they were very, very understanding.
Super great about it. But I then had a conversation with a woman, with an interviewer. And I was like, you know, if our movie had not been about me getting sick, I don't know that I would have had the courage to request breaks, which is so fucked up. Mm-hmm. I think I would have been like, well, it's my job to do this. And I should be grateful for being here. I should be grateful that I have this work. I should be grateful that they want to promote it. And so I should shut my mouth and just get through this. It'll be okay. And so in some ways, doing press about the movie gave me the spine that I needed to request the time and the space that I needed to stay healthy. And I've done my best to try to take that into my current job, where I'm not no longer writing stuff about being sick, but I have requested, hey, can we have this meeting be a phone call? I'm not feeling great today. And I kind of want to make sure I'm taking care of myself. As everybody knows who works with me, when I get infusions done that day, I don't let myself, even if everybody else needs to meet, I don't let myself like do meetings.
Yeah, but you still feel like you tremendous guilt about it, and you still feel like you should do something constructive on those days.
I do. And so I guess what I'm saying is I get it. I get how you're feeling, and I don't know how to make that guilt go away, except for the fact that you won't be able to do your job. Like, if you get sick by going into the office, Jen, you won't be able to do your job
and
anymore.
And you're keeping safe the people that are your clients that work with you. You're not doing this just for yourself. You're doing this for them.
That's too. True. That's yeah. true.
I know that you and her as Immuno Buddies feel this guilt. If I could do anything to absolve you of this guilt, I would. I know I can't, but you're doing the right thing. She says, I'm going to be like, no, stay inside, stay safe. And yeah, that is what I'm saying. You have to do this. And this time will pass and you'll go back to helping the people that you want to help. Go back to doing what it is that you do. You will go back to it. But in order to be able to go back to that, don't lose the forest for the trees. Right yeah. now, just take care of yourself. Keep yourself safe. Keep them safe. And once we're done, you'll be back right at it.
And also, you're still helping people now just because
really
you're not
are.
Going into the office. And I think I try to remember that, like, even if I can't go into a meeting, it's hard, I think, when you have something that you look healthy. I think I look, for the most part, healthy. I don't think people would see me and be like, she looks sickly. And I think I really struggle with that, of like having to bend over backwards to like be like, I swear to God, I'm really like, I'm a sick person. I swear to God, like I won't do this on a regular basis, but if I need to, I'm going to have to take a knee. And I think, I still struggle with it. I don't know. I feel guilty about it. I feel like people think I'm faking somehow, which is kind of a bonkers thing.
Nobody thinks you're faking. This is all in your head.
It definitely is. Yeah. And so I would say what I've tried to land on is I have to keep myself well, and I know when I'm not going to be well. And so I have to, even if I do feel guilty, I still have to do it because I still have to, what?
Nothing.
What?
Keep going.
That's it. I still have to do it.
Yeah.
What are you laughing at?
I just read a sentence that you had texted me the other day from that game that we've been playing.
We'll get to that.
I'm so sorry. I didn't.
And let's see. Oh, and then Yelena K wrote in and had a very good point. It's a long email, so I'm not going to read it. But I have been suggesting that people do workouts on Instagram live workouts. Great. This is how I feel about therapy as well. If you commit, well, the analogy doesn't really work, actually. That if you do one workout on Instagram Live to try it out, great, do that for free. If you have the means and you want to keep doing workouts with that person, do slide them a little bit of cash if you can.
Right. They probably have accounts set up.
A lot of people have Venmos, GoFundMe, all that stuff. Definitely do that, because these people are doing it for free because they are bored and they're trying to drum up work, but they also need money too. So if you have the means, keep yourself
healthy. And
they're
trying to help people. It's not just to drum up work and because they're bored.
Certainly
they're helping people.
Yeah. But yeah, give them money if you can. That's a very good point. Thank you, Lainey K.
Let's talk about the stuff that we've been watching, playing, consuming, all that. You want to go to that? So the one I want to say real quick. We're still playing Final Fantasy VII. This is a great game. Great. I would say if you're not like a video game person.
Maybe not for you.
I don't know. I think it
is. Oh, interesting. Okay.
There's some stat stuff. Not too much. I just mean it's so like story forward. Play on the easy mode because that apparently is extremely easy.
There's some RPG stuff in there that I think.
You won't have to deal with that stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
It's so like narrative and character based and it's such a great world that that I think this is actually a good one to get into. Mm-hmm. I will say what I like about it is, again, and I said earlier that, you know, I'm not familiar with anime manga world. And so this world is so novel to me because it's more common in anime, but I'm not used to it because there's like swords and guns and magic and robot technology. But then some people are wearing normal clothes. The cars are really retro. It's such a weird, strange, awesome mix of different like iconography. Mm-hmm. In my head, it's always like it's either guns or swords. This is both.
You don't get both. Yeah.
You never get guns and magic.
Yeah.
This is both. So it's sort of like medieval. It's sort of futuristic. It's such a mashup of different things that every time I play it, I'm struck by how it's a world that I'm really not that familiar with. Mm-hmm. I know it exists more in anime. The other thing is a lot of these Japanese fantasy stuff is really very like environmentalism friendly.
And, so much so.
And anti-technology. Like, and that's been with a lot of Japanese stuff.
Miyazaki.
Like going back, yeah, Miyazaki's all that.
Yeah.
Godzilla, obviously.
Miyazaki is all that. That is true.
Miyazaki's all that. But it's interesting, again, don't want to put simplified narratives on it, but it's interesting that a place like Japan that has been on the wrong end of a massive technological attack breakthrough mm-hmm. in their history, that the work that's coming out of there is against it. It's interesting, right?
Did Godzilla come out of that too? Was Godzilla?
I mean, Godzilla rises from nuclear
literally rises from
nuclear testing.
Wow. That is interesting.
So it's interesting. Again, don't want to simplify it, but I thought that was interesting. But there's some language. What was the sentence you wrote down? And I want
there's
you.
There's just some dialogue. Some of the dialogue, and I've talked to other people about this. Some of the dialogue in Final Fantasy VII, the remake, is a bit
idiosyncratic.
Idiosyncratic, including the character of Barrett, who screams at one point, "The rot runs deep in this damn pizza." Pizza and the noun pizza refers to the city.
I think the sector. The government.
The whole damn pizza.
The rot runs deep in this damn pizza. What's great about it? First of all the characters in this game are obsessed with pizza.
They do talk about pizza quite a bit.
A lot, because yeah. I think it's sort of like I don't know what it is. Maybe in Japan pizza is huge. Everybody talks about pizza all the time, like literal pizza. But then here,
taking it to another level.
The rot runs deep in this damn pizza. We've definitely used it a lot.
It's a great, like, badass, like, noir-ish kind of
the
line.
The rot runs deep in this damn pizza.
Yeah, try it. We're going to have you try it a couple different ways. Try it. You're grieving. Someone you love just got murdered in front of you.
The rot runs deep in this damn pizza.
Say it like you just found an old pizza.
The rot runs deep in this damn pizza.
Now say it wailing to the sky like Darth Vader when he's like, no!
The rot runs deep in this damn pizza!
Wow. That's great. Which is kind of how Barrett...
He says it very seriously.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like very like, the rot runs deep in this damn... And the other characters are sort of like, yeah, man.
Yeah, that's right.
That's
everything
right.
You're saying is true.
I was just going to say the rot runs deep in this damn pizza, but you took literally the words out of my mouth. You took the pizza out of my mouth. There's rot in this pizza.
There is rot in this pizza. What else have we been consuming? Oh, should we talk about Idaho the movie and Idaho the movie 2? we found that on Amazon Prime the other day.
We were hanging out the other day, other night, and we were just like, let's just have something on that's like a pleasant thing going on in the background where we're like hanging out, listening to music, talking. And we found a thing called Idaho the movie.
Documentary. Idaho the movie.
And Idaho the movie 2. Yeah. And if I remember correctly, they both came out the same year.
Yeah.
Which I find very suspect.
I think they just had so much.
They had so much footage.
Yeah.
You think that's what it is?
Probably.
And the first one was such a hit.
Won an Emmy, apparently. Was it nominated or won?
I think Idaho the movie won an Emmy.
Amazing.
But then the sequel...
Did not. Well, same year. You're competing against yourself.
You're competing. You're splitting the votes. I don't know. Back to the Future 2 and Back to the Future 3 where they like shot it back to back? Or like the Lord of the Rings movies where they're like, this is going to be huge, huge. Idaho the movie 2.
We watched it with the sound off, but it looked very pretty.
It's not good when they talk to people. I don't want to talk to people.
I don't know much about Idaho, but and I did not learn anything from just looking at it. I should have been listening.
People skiing. This is what I didn't want from Idaho the movie. I just wanted the nature stuff. Yeah. I didn't want people.
If I want to know about the people of Idaho, I'll watch Idaho the People the movie.
Yeah, Idaho the People the movie too. They really improved it from Idaho the People.
You were laughing so hard at the first one. And then to see there was the sequel.
It's free to watch on Amazon Prime. So if you haven't, go check it out.
Tell us, because we didn't listen to it, so I bet it looked beautiful. Again, great.
I imagine all the interviews are just people being like, you know what I love? What's your favorite state? It's gotta be Idaho. Speaking of noir, should we mention we watched Chinatown?
Chinatown.
Which we had seen before, but not in a long time.
I've never seen it.
You've never seen Chinatown?
I've never seen Chinatown, Jake.
Wow. It's one of those movies that's like such a classic movie.
It is a good movie.
It's a very good movie.
It is. I don't know how else to. It's like it's a drama. It's noir. Jack Nicholson.
I can't believe you're trying to sell people on Chinatown.
Here's the thing. I'm not a person who loves to go back. I've been trying harder lately to, right, even pre-pandemic, go back.
You
want to
watch
some of the
all
classics.
The classics you, yeah, missed, like Chinatown, Idaho the movie too.
yeah, absolutely. So yeah, it's just a really, really well constructed.
It's so well written.
Mystery.
It's a well written mystery and thematic. I mean, just the stuff that they plant and then pays off later. It is directed by Roman Polanski, who,
oh yeah,
we should mention,
is a monster.
Yeah, he's in self. He like basically escaped the authorities. It's interesting.
Yeah, that's right.
It's interesting that the movie has
some, it's got some interesting stuff in it that when you that kind stuff, of realize that
it
it's,
really makes it weird.
Yeah, it does.
If you know the horrible stuff that Roman
Polanski did. Faye Dunaway's great in it. I'm trying to move past Roman Polanski because I didn't, that's not the kind of thing. Obviously, let's not watch anything new he's making, guys. Let's not do that. But I just never seen this movie, and it is a classic, and it's a classic for a reason. It's a very, very well made movie, and Jack Nicholson's really great in it. He's tremendous. I tell you another thing, Jack Nicholson's in.
The Big Dance, the Last Dance. Sorry, The Last Dance.
Holy shit!
It's so
this
good.
Documentary series. I've seen some people having hot takes online that it's not that great. I disagree. Personally,
it's also some of the people who have hot takes that are big, big, big basketball fanatics who know all basketball, who know all this stuff, who, yeah, know everything about basketball. And they maybe to them, there's nothing
old
new
news,
in it.
It's true.
As someone, so we're on this different spectrums, right? So there are those people who know everything. You know nothing.
I know nothing about basketball.
And I know some.
Yeah.
I was not a huge like NBA fan at that point, but I know enough to know who all the players are,
yeah,
and all that.
But this is an 8-part Michael Jordan documentary that Linda Holmes mentioned in our,
I think it's 10, I hope.
10? Okay. In our bonus episode, Linda Holmes mentioned watching and also enjoying. I have been loving it. We've seen 4 episodes, which is all that's been available thus far. I think it is so compelling, and it's interesting to watch someone, Michael Jordan's face, so corny, feels like home and feels like America somehow. Like, just looking at his face, I'm like, everything's gonna be okay. Well, somehow
it's interesting because it's from that period we were talking about, this like when we were talking about Reality Bites in the 90s where things just felt more hopeful. This is from that period, and we were saying, is it because of how old we were? Or
I don't know that I felt that way, by the way.
Really?
Yeah.
This makes me feel hopeful watching it.
Yeah.
It's also interesting that those days are sort of the last days before the internet became really, really ubiquitous.
That's true.
And I firmly believe, I think the internet's done great stuff. I'm going to sound so old right now. But I do think we created something that's stronger than us, that sort of has changed us and affected us in many negative ways that we had not anticipated at all.
Correct.
In the beginning, I think the promise of the internet was it's going to democratize everybody's voice, everybody will have access to other people. What we're finding is you'll have access to new ideas. What we're finding is increasingly what happens is you just find people who exactly agree with you, and you find these communities and you just spin out, and you're very, some very harmful fringe ideas can start to feel mainstream and then become mainstream.
Back, Michael Jordan.
Anyway, Michael Jordan. Sorry. I'm saying this was the last era of
I think you're right that. About that. But I don't think I realized how much Michael Jordan meant to me. I don't really have any connection to him. North Carolina, obviously. But I don't really have never felt a connection to him. But seeing his face and seeing him take so much joy and pride and have right. so much focus has been it's just been really gorgeous for me to like behold him. Also, he's so good looking. He's so good looking. Such a beautiful man.
It's also interesting to see someone reflect on the days, on like really formative days in their life where they talking about them truly achieving their dreams yeah. that were very, very important to them. It's just interesting watching just on a human level, somebody relive
yeah.
truly their like glory days.
Yeah. It's been lovely. And obviously they talk to Pippen, they talk to other players. I don't know. I'm not great at this. I'm sorry. They talk to the coach guy who is very tall.
Phil Jackson.
There we go.
That's correct, Emily.
And then they talk to the little tiny guy.
I like that you've taken away from all this Phil Jackson stuff. That's like so much weird, not weird, but
he's an interesting guy.
He's such an interesting guy. Your takeaway from it is he's tall.
You don't realize how tall he is until you're like, oh, you're standing next to Michael Jordan and you look the same height.
He's taller than Michael Jordan.
Yeah. So, and watching the relationship they all have and kind of watching the group dynamic of that team and Dennis Rodman, who I always found fascinating and continue to find fascinating. If you don't give a shit about sports, I think you'll still love this because it really, really right. does a great job of bringing you in. Although I will say sometimes when they're like, and then they'll be like, and then that night the Bulls were on fire. And then they just show a bunch of sequences that I'm like, I guess that's what it looks like when it
No, but there's some montages of like Michael Jordan just like dunking.
That's always great. But a lot of times, like my brain just can't synthesize basketball, and I'll just be like, and then basketball. But my thing, the thing where Michael Jordan is like going to dunk with one hand and then he passes it behind his thing and then does like a low dunk. That's the technical term, right? That's fucking cool.
I think he does a layup.
Shh,
a low dunk.
Shh, I got this.
Real quick, there's no such thing as a low dunk. The rim is 10 feet high.
My dad is there's no such thing as a My dad's like an avid basketball dunk. Player or wasn't, you know, he's older now, but great at basketball. I grew up watching him play basketball, like community basketball, and he's very embarrassed to be my father right now.
No, he's not. He's yeah. very proud of you. I find myself hitting pause just to make it last longer.
So, hell
and then
yeah.
walk around. Like, we'll hit pause and be like, okay, 16 minutes left. Good. And they do two episodes every Sunday, and we split them up, so we have yeah. more to look forward to. Linda said this, but it is so fun watching grown men in their, like, late 40s still angry at the people from 30 years ago. I love it.
It's kind of
I
awesome.
Love it. When they're like talking to Jordan and they're like, oh, this is what Isaiah Thomas said. And he like rolls his eyes and you could tell he still dislikes him so much.
Who was the one player that he was like the Pistons. He was like just saying the word Pistons.
Horace Grant
angry.
Was like, you so know, the funny. Pistons. And he was like, oh,
damn Pistons.
Like he like lost his train of thought. It's such a great moment. We rewound and watched it. He's like the thing with the Pistons. Oh, damn Pistons. Like he went back to that like place so 33 great. Years ago.
It's really good. I highly recommend it. It's on Hulu. It's on yeah. ESPN2.
As Emily's saying, if you're not into basketball or sports at all, this is a good watch.
Where did the origin of basketball is my favorite sport? I like the way they dribble up and down the court.
It's a song.
Is it from a song?
Yeah, it's a song.
It's pretty corny.
Here, I'm going to look it up. Basketball is my
favorite
also,
sport.
Also, what a basic thing to like about
like,
basketball.
Here's the thing I like
You know what's really exciting about basketball? The dribbling, right? That's why we all watch. That's why there's a big dribbling contest that happens at the All-Star game every year.
I would watch a dribbling contest.
Let me see what this song is.
Are you looking up the origin of it?
It's by Curtis Blow.
That's a Curtis Blow song? Yeah. What's the name of the song?
guess.
Basketball?
Yes. Curtis Blow, why don't you listen to the song? You like you don't know what basketball is, do you? You just found out earlier today.
My favorite hip hop songs are the ones from like the early 80s when they're just like talking about the things that they see. Yeah. It's like, it's my, like early Ice-T stuff is like some of my favorite stuff.
There's a lot of great 90s hip hop in this documentary as well.
That is true.
So good.
A lot of good stuff.
This documentary is great. I mean, it's truly been the thing that we've been watching that I like unabashedly, because we watch, you know, Chinatown, it's not going to put you in a good mood, right?
Absolutely not.
Idaho, the movie too.
Hey, you're going to be fine.
You're gonna like it.
Yeah.
But this is the thing that genuinely like lifts my spirits when
and
I watch
this
it.
Is why when this documentary is over, you and I need to watch Cheer together, because I watched it on my own and you're going to motherfucking love it.
Okay.
It's so good. And again, it's the same thing. You don't need to be into the sport. You don't need to know much about the sport to love it. Cheer. Cheer's great. And right. If you haven't seen Cheer, by the way, everybody should watch Cheer.
I find when
Cheers. Thanks for listening.
Okay.
Okay.
I want to say, like, you know, the fact that like Alien does uplift me, whereas Chinatown doesn't. I think the difference is because Chinatown is in some ways it's a dark, depressing movie. The first time you watch it, you're just in the emotions of it. And then as I watch that stuff more and more, that's when it starts to feel inspiring, because then I start to see like how they made the movie, how they constructed it, all that stuff.
You probably would feel that way if you watched Chinatown.
I would probably feel that way about Chinatown if I watched it a few times, because there were a couple screenwriting things that they do in there that we were like, oh my God, this is from that earlier thing. It's like the little flourishes that are completely unnecessary. So good. Should we talk about this show we've been watching?
I'll say, as a screenwriter, watching movies intimidates me, but reading scripts makes me realize like, oh, these are just words on a page. I can do words on a page.
The other thing
if you're a screenwriter.
About words on a page was I looked up the script of like The Thing, and it was a similar feeling to the chestburster scene where I just looked at the page, right? And the page just looked good. Like just the spacing, the font, whatever it was, it just looked good. And the idea that they took this like document and made like one of the greatest movies of all time, it just felt, I don't know, I felt like I was looking at some like artifact, you know, that was full of potential and promise, none actualized as yet. And then it did.
And then it did.
And it just was like really exciting. I didn't even go past the first page. I just looked at it and I don't know. It's hard to explain, but I think it's what you said. It's the idea of, oh, somebody wrote this. Just people made this thing.
Yeah.
You know, that's what inspires me the most about movies and TV shows that I love, is like the idea. I like hearing about the process, because you realize like, oh, you think of these people as like gods, you know, who like make. No, it took work. They second guessed themselves. They didn't know if they were doing
the
right.
They checked in with people.
They checked in with people. They did rewrites. There were happy accidents. It's like all the weird magic that goes into making a movie. It's all like work and sort of a little bit
it's
random.
It's also true. Anything that's good is a miracle.
Yeah.
And a lot of things are good.
Right. To make something great, everything
it's
has to be great.
Miracle.
To make something terrible, one thing has to go wrong.
It's absolutely true. Yeah. It's such a bummer. A show I've been watching, a HBO show. It's a documentary series, 4-part. It's called We're Here. It features Shangela, Bob the Drag Queen, and Eureka, who are very popular Drag Race contestants. And it's a... it's basically a Tu Wong Fu, the TV show. It's them, also a little Queer Eye. It's a really great idea that these three queens go into a small town in America and like put on a drag show with people. Some of the people are like excited about being put into drag. Some of them are reluctant. Some of them are doing it to apologize to people. It's a really interesting show that doesn't, and as much as I love Queer Eye, I think Queer Eye sometimes sanitizes some of the uglier parts of homophobia, racism, whereas the show is kind of thus far kind of moving more in that direction.
And I think sanitizing that stuff is okay too.
Also like, too, I love because sometimes Queer Eye. You don't want that.
Yeah. I don't think everyone, you know, different things have different purposes.
Yeah. But this one I think I've been enjoying so far. I'm curious. There's a lot of like drag TV out right now. So it's interesting. A show that we've both been watching together.
I saw billboards for this show.
Yes.
And I was like, it never has a billboard made me less excited to watch a show. I saw this. It's a show called Dave.
It's on FX.
And the billboard is him Dave, who I guess is a rapper.
We don't know. We don't really know. We knew nothing. We're
about
old
him.
And uncool. We don't really know anything.
We don't know anything about him.
Lil Dicky. Yeah.
Only know from the show. It's him like popping out of like a jean zipper or something.
A boxer.
Yeah. And I was like, this is so gross and lame. And I don't know why, but you were like, let's just watch the first episode just because like what else is there to do? And even I think like bad comedies are like interesting to watch. So you watched the first couple and we were like, oh, this is pretty good. There's some like funny stuff in it. And now.
It's so good.
It has no business being
this
good.
It doesn't have to be this good. And it is so good. They get great cameos first off. Like, well, in an episode?
Yeah, there's a lot of good surprise cameos that we don't want to spoil.
That's a good point. In fact, Harry, we may take out the part because that is a good cameo. But this is a show that explores like weird sex stuff in a very healthy way. It explores mental illness in a very healthy way. It explores this thing I've never seen in a show before of realizing that your childhood friends were maybe not your childhood friends. Like, it's got so much kind of sensitive, interesting stuff, and it's fucking funny.
It is a lot of dick jokes too.
It's a lot of dick jokes. And I, it's true. Like, when I think now that I know the show, like, I don't know what image I would have picked to be like the main image for the show. But I also think maybe the show was appealing to Lil Dicky's fans, which we did not know he existed. So we're not really. And the reason I wanted to watch it is that a friend of ours' girlfriend is in the show. And he was like, it seems like it'll be cool. So I was like, all right, let's give it a try. It's just really good. I just don't know how else to say it.
Episode, you know, so we would say like it starts off pretty good, but you could see it gets more confident. And it really, as Emily was saying, it tackles mental illness and like kink and that kind of stuff. I think episode 5 was the one where we were watching it and we just could not believe how well it handled a very, very sensitive and difficult topic.
But also still funny, the whole time funny. It's not like a lesson funny. Like, no. Oh my God, this is a very special episode.
Yeah, it's a lot about masculinity and what kind of, because he's a guy who is, he's Jewish and he's like totally a nerd,
dork,
geek guy.
Straight up dork, yeah.
And he's in a world where, you know, the sort of the machoness is very like exaggerated. A lot of hip hop is very much is about men being like strong and powerful and all that stuff. And he's really does not present as that. So it's him negotiating a much more macho, cooler world than he's used to. So it really becomes a lot about expectations of masculinity and that kind of stuff.
And it subverts it at every turn. And his right-hand man is played by a guy named Gata. His character's name is Gata. His name is also like his...
Gata. He's a rapper. Gata.
I think I'm a little bit in love with him. I'm sorry, honey.
He's great.
I'm a little bit in love with
Andrew Santino, who we know is in it, who plays sort of his manager friend, agent, is really good. It's just
great. I highly recommend it. And I, go watch it. Just see what you think. It's so funny. It's so funny. And I think part of it is people being irritated that a guy who's like a well-known rapper is also very funny and put together a very good TV show. I think the other comedy people we know are like irritated.
I think people, first of all, I did not expect the show
either
to be good.
Yeah.
And so there are people who are like, oh my God, this thing. I kind of want to be like, well, kind of watch it.
Give it a shot.
It's interesting because the main guy, Dave Bird is his name. He's got such a defined comedic persona right from the beginning.
Similar to what you were saying about Abby's show.
Abby McEnany from, man, that feels like it was so long ago.
We watched that show 20 years ago.
From
nothing.
Work in Progress.
Work in Progress.
From Work in Progress. Man, that was like in the weirds.
That was in the weirds. But again, another comedic voice, fully formed comedic voice.
Fully formed comedic voice. Interesting.
Yeah. And it's not a heavy show. It's not a show that'll make you be like, ugh.
No, it's funny.
The weirds. I also want to recommend two books. One is How We Fight for Our Lives by Saeed Jones. Normally a poet, wrote a memoir. It's one of the most touching, beautiful memoirs. And I read it a while ago, but it's just like, I'll just find myself kind of thinking about it randomly. And I was like, that means I need to recommend it. Also, I just finished reading a book called Nothing to See Here by Kevin Wilson, which is a book about a young woman who is tasked with taking care of two children who randomly will erupt into flames. It's a comedy.
Wow.
Yeah. Very interesting book.
That is a premise.
It is. It's really well handled. Those are two amazing books that I highly recommend people read.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah. What would you like to plug, Kumail?
Give us a good review.
Yeah.
I'll say that.
Yeah.
I would like to plug having some intentionality and just being able to label how you're feeling. To me, just last night when I couldn't sleep, being able to be like, okay, I'm a little bit numb. That was something. Mm-hmm. That felt like something. And then being able to like talk about it. Not saying that. I'm just saying right now it felt very helpful to do that. So I would just say, as you said, I'm plugging something you said, intentionality. Just go easy on yourself.
And numbness is not awful. It's a fine, it's a good temporary kind of way to take care of yourself.
It's literally numbness.
But it's not something we should be striving for doing every day. And if we find that we're in that every day, maybe that's time to kind of start steering the ship a little bit.
Right. If the things that normally bring you joy or make you feel a certain way are not doing it, at least for me, that was a sign.
Yeah, absolutely.
But give us good reviews also.
I would like to plug continuing to wear masks when you're in public.
Yeah.
I know there's a lot of hot debate about it. It's one of those things where it's like, if you're kind of arguing the technicalities of like, well, I don't want to wear it when I'm doing this. Okay, that's fine. I get it. Have any temper tantrum you need to, but I think for the good of our community, it's a good thing. It's a good thing to wear a mask if you can. And
you're protecting other people more than you're even protecting yourself. So in some way, wearing a mask is a selfless act.
And then some people are like, oh, but I'm fine. Guess who doesn't know that? Other people.
Also, even if you are fine, there are asymptomatic carriers of this thing. You could make someone else sick.
Also want to plug May 22nd on Netflix, The Lovebirds, starring Kumail Nanjiani and Issa Rae will be on Netflix. Make sure you watch it. We should do a thing. We'll do a thing to celebrate it.
Yeah, we'll do a thing to celebrate. I'm very excited. I can't wait for that movie to come out. And to end, I just want to say, you know, the rot runs deep in this damn pizza. Don't forget that. All right.
Thank you. Stay safe, everybody.
You can say it so many different ways. Like, all right, the rot runs deep in this damn pizza.
.com, .org.
Goodbye.
.edu.
At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. Whether your pursuit involves a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree, GCU's learning environments are designed for supportive networking and collaboration. With over 330 academic programs, GCU provides a path to help you fulfill your dreams. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.